Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 122 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, and Sean Sears was supposed to be with me today, but he's missing in action. So I brought in my good friend, Cubs, Locked On Cubs contributor Kelly Wallace, also of Expanded Roster. How's it going, Kelly?
It's going great. I'm glad to be back here.
Yeah, we're doing a mailbag podcast today because the Cubs did not play yesterday. No real huge news to talk about. We do have one transaction we'll talk about briefly, but today the Cubs play the Nationals at 1:20. It's Kyle Hendricks against Jeremy Hellickson. Hendricks, as we've talked about on this podcast before, has been much better his last couple games. He threw seven great innings in St. Louis 2 weeks ago. He was pretty sharp against the Padres his last time out, but a hot day with the wind blowing out. He ended up with four runs and 5 2/3 innings, but we can kind of give him a pass. He looked pretty good.
I thought the line was a little deceptive. I thought he looked much better than the results would indicate. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's definitely looked much better the last couple games. So Jeremy Hellickson, a 3.56 ERA in 16 starts with the Nats this year. Over his last seven starts, he has a 5.14 ERA in 35 innings pitched. He doesn't appear to be going too deep into games in those seven starts, six innings only once. And he's thrown over 80 pitches only twice. So,
interesting.
This is a guy that if the Cubs could make him work a little bit, they could get into the Nationals bullpen, which would be good for the rest of the series.
Would be good for the rest of the series, but also the Nationals bullpen hasn't been a huge strength of theirs. So also just easier. Plus, you want to get a jump on a game like this when you know you have to face Scherzer on Sunday. So.
Exactly. It'd be great to take these first two. And, you know, Brandon Kinsler's obviously not there anymore. Sean Doolittle's been injured. So, yeah, the bullpen is a bit of a weakness right now for the Nationals. The Cubs, speaking of the bullpen, they have one transaction to report today. Randy Rosario was sent back down to AAA, and the Cubs have signed left-handed reliever Jorge De La Rosa. He pitched 35 innings for the D-backs this year, posting a 4.63 ERA, with 37 hits, 19 walks, and just 27 strikeouts. I have very little opinion on this other than the Cubs need to find a lefty who can get outs and maybe they find lightning in a bottle.
I mean, yeah, I can't say that I'm super familiar with De La Rosa. I looked over a lot of his stats when I saw the transaction. His walk rate is higher than I would like. But again, the options for picking up a left-handed reliever at this point in the season are obviously incredibly limited. So I am just going to hope for the best and hope that this is another one of those situations where Theo or the front office has seen something in him that they feel can be brought out here or make him useful to this team.
Right. Yeah. He's been mostly a starter for his career, but the last two seasons with the Diamondbacks, a 4.38 ERA in 86 and a third innings. 4.2 walks per nine, 7.5 strikeouts per nine. So a pretty mediocre lefty reliever, but maybe his splits say something nicer about him.
Well, and Randy has been clearly getting hit with the inevitable regression pretty hard. Right. So even if he is only mediocre, he still might be a better option than Randy Rosario right now.
Yeah. This season, it looks like he was used pretty much as – like not as a lefty guy. He was used just as anything. And the interesting split here is for his 35 innings, right-handers hit 324 with a 414 on base and a 514 slugging in 88 plate appearances, while lefties hit 220, 309 on base, 407 slugging in 70 plate appearances. So if he's used pretty much just against lefties, kind of like Brian Dunsing was.
Yeah, I could see that being his role.
Yeah, maybe he can be useful after all. So,
well, I mean, certainly it would be hard to be a downgrade from what we saw from Brian Dunsing before he went to the DL with his incredibly real injury.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Is even if this is what he is, he's still an upgrade over Dunsing. He's an upgrade over Rosario, who had, you know, Kenny, like you mentioned, he had some really good results early in his Cubs tenure, but the underlying peripherals weren't backing up those results, and now we're seeing the regression towards the mean a little bit.
I mean, we wanted to hope that he would continue to outperform the peripherals, but I mean, he was getting very lucky by all metrics available to judge those things. So,
right, stranding a very high percentage of base runners, walking a lot of batters, not missing bats, and then suddenly just not allowing runs. Kind of like Brian Dunsing early in the year.
Yeah, he was playing with fire the whole time, though. So unfortunately, you know, it's expected on some level. But, you know, I know that the GOAT has many fans who are probably very sad today.
Yeah, that's too bad. I still have hope for him as a reliever going forward. This isn't like this is the last we've heard of Randy Rosario. I know he'll be back in September.
Oh, for sure.
If not earlier. And then, you know, the Cubs have him for a few more years after that. So this is a guy who has some potential.
He does, and I think he'll get better over time. I thought it was a very promising first series of major league appearances for him. In any case,
right. All right. Well, let's wrap on that. We're going to try and make this a little bit quicker today, since it's a mailbag podcast. We'll go to our second segment where we have a handful of questions to answer. So first question we have comes from Joel Reese, who's a good friend of mine, a former podcast host on a different podcast. And he has this question. What has happened to the starting pitching? Every starter is pitching well below what was expected. Is Jim Hickey to blame? Was Bosio really that good? Is the pitching coach relevant at all here?
You know, it's funny because we actually had this exact discussion on Twitter like a week ago.
Right.
Because I was looking for someone to blame. Because it obviously is incredibly frustrating, and there doesn't seem to be an incredibly obvious explanation for the fact that this is affecting the entire rotation all at the same time.
Yeah, and I feel like, and this is the argument I made with you at the time, and I do understand the want to find one source for all of their struggles, but I do look at it as, you can break it down individually. I mean, this is like, what, five or six individual guys.
Right.
Kyle Hendricks, on his own, he goes through a period every year where he struggles mechanically, and then he has to fix it on his own. And from what we've seen, he has fixed it. And when I talked to him in St. Louis, I wrote a story for NBC Sports Chicago. He explained to me what was wrong mechanically, how he fixed it, and then his recent issues were basically just like adjusting mid-game to the game plan, and he told me he was going to be fine going forward. And since then, he has been good.
And so, I believe him. I think he's generally a good judge of his pitching and a very smart evaluator of his own mechanics. So I think we can definitely trust him to know what's going on there.
Right. Quintana, the problem has been like one out of every three or four games, he just nibbles and doesn't attack hitters. And that was something he did last year, too. With Lester, it's been a little bit of regression, the fact that he's getting older and he's not missing bats quite as much and he's throwing a little more out of the zone. That's not like totally, you know, that's not like a huge surprise for a guy as he's aged. Last year, he had a worse year than he's having this year. With Darvish, it's been injury. And with Tyler Chatwood, it's been like crazy all over the place mechanics where he can't throw strikes. So I don't feel like any one of those individual things are anything you can pin on Jim Hickey.
Yeah, and I think Chatwood also is beyond what anyone expected. I think that's a weird freak thing. I don't know that anyone gets the blame for that. I mean, the walk rate is just so astronomical. It doesn't seem like, I don't know.
Yeah, and with Chatwood specifically, this is a guy who has worked quite a bit with Jim Hickey on fixing the mechanical problems he's developed. And the major point that he made, which is something that I had been thinking but didn't have the, let's say, pitching cachet to back up with my own statement, he made this statement when he got bumped from the rotation of the bullpen. He said, this might be good for me because it's really difficult to make those mechanical fixes when you have to go to the mound every 5 days and get major league hitters out.
That makes sense to me, too. Yeah. I totally understand that. But I will say that his last performance didn't inspire confidence that was happening.
No. And, you know, I think Chatwood for this season is a lost cause. I don't know about next year or the year after, but this is a guy who has had two Tommy John surgeries. When I wrote about the Chatwood signing when it happened, I wrote about how it was a gamble because there's research that shows that Tommy John survivors of two surgeries If they do make it back to the major leagues, the big things for them are they're not able to pitch a lot of innings and they're not able to control their pitches like they want to. And that's kind of been Tyler Chatwood this year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much exactly what the problem has been. So.
Yeah. And for the final point on this question, if we're going to ding Jim Hickey for anything with the starting pitching, I think we also have to look at how much better the bullpen's been and ask the question of if it's his fault the starting pitching has been bad and Chris Bosio is being praised for the starting pitching being good prior, do we ding Bosio for the bullpen before and say it was his fault and now say that the bullpen being so much better as a result of Jim Hickey? I don't think the answer is yes in either case, really.
Yeah, it doesn't make the most sense. Though, like I said, I do understand that from a sort of removed perspective, seeing an entire rotation go through such severe struggles that are uncharacteristic of any of those individual players, I understand the want to try to find an explanation that's a little more unifying. But yeah, I would say it doesn't seem like there's an obvious one that is accurate.
Yeah, I think it's really just, you know, five or six guys with their all separate issues. And that's really the best explanation.
Lucky us. Yeah.
All right. Next question is on your favorite player, I think. Maybe second favorite. Probably favorite. Daniel Young asks, Wilson Contreras was supposed to break out this year, but that clearly belongs to Baez. He is on pace for half the home runs and only slightly better than half the RBIs as last year. Has his defense improved this year? Pitch framing and the like. Thanks for the pod. So I'll go with this on first. Yeah, I feel like Wilson Contreras really broke out in the second half last year in a way that he looked clearly like the third best hitter on the team. It was Bryant, Rizzo, Contreras. And outside of that injury he had where he missed about a month of time, he really was the man for a very large portion of the time. And so it is a bit disappointing that he hasn't been quite as good offensively this year. I don't feel like progress is linear, though, with his defense. I feel like a lot of the aspects of his defense have been very, very good. And I don't want to say necessarily even improved, because I think a lot of those were really, really good last year. Maybe incremental improvements. But pitch framing still has not been great. It's something that he works on. I know that in the metric season, like the lower portion of it, I feel like it's been passable for the most part. He's not buying you extra strikes like a Yadier or Molina might, but he's not, you know, killing the pitching staff, let's say. So my general answer to this question, and I'm curious if you agree, Contreras has been a little disappointing on the offensive side considering what we expected moving into this year. Defensively, he's been excellent. Pitch framing, it's been just kind of average.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of opinions on this. I think about this a lot. So what I would say in regards to Wilson, first of all, I would say that I would agree with you defensively that the one weak spot is the pitch framing, though I think I am more annoyed by the general existence of pitch framing as something that matters than most people. Robotic umps, please, tomorrow. But anyway, beyond that, I think that you have to consider with Wilson, and this is something he said earlier in the year, that his focus this year has been much more on his defense than on his offense. And that part of the reason for that is learning two brand new pitchers, obviously, and focusing more on the way that he's defending and the way that he frames pitches and the way that he plays as a defensive catcher, but more importantly, even just the intangible stuff of building relationships with a new starting pitcher, you know, getting comfortable with those people, getting comfortable with calling a game. It's all that kind of stuff too. So you have to think about the fact that he does have a lot on his plate right now that other players don't really have to deal with who play other positions. So I think that's part of it. He did specifically say that it was taking away from him focusing on his offensive approach. So I would say, first of all, it doesn't seem like developing his offense has been the first priority this year, which is, again, unfortunate because, like you said, he did have a huge breakout season at the end of last year. And it did seem like that was going to be something that, if wasn't completely sustainable at that level, at least that the power and the approach would probably stick around this year, which obviously did not happen or has not happened. And I would also say that when you're thinking about him as a defensive catcher, it's important to remember that he was actually a third baseman and is a converted infielder. So he hasn't necessarily had the lifetime of experience catching that a lot of other top catchers in Major League Baseball have. So right. I would say there's also a learning curve that he might be slightly behind on compared to someone else of his age because of that.
Yeah, I think it is a really good point that he has picked up a lot of the aspects of defense as a catcher very quickly, like throwing to second base, blocking balls, a lot of that, even calling a game. A lot of that is stuff that takes a while to really refine, and he's done that quickly.
And blocking balls, for the record, incredibly hard, incredibly underappreciated, and Wilson is incredibly good at it.
Yeah, and just in general, his instincts as a catcher, too, are very good. The pitch framing is behind, but it's something that he's talented enough and smart enough and works hard enough that I'm not necessarily of the opinion that it'll never be good. It's like with Schwarber in left field, that he worked really hard and lost a lot of weight, and he's become an average left fielder. I feel like Contreras can do the same as a pitch framer and become maybe not one of the best in the game at it, but, you know, fine. Not like he would be noticeably bad.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he seems like the kind of, and he's clearly aware of it. I mean, he, you know, if he's publicly discussing the fact that he knows that's something he wants to work on, he's clearly aware that it is one of his weak spots. But I also do think it's worth mentioning that he does not exactly have the easiest starting staff to work with. One of the things people were saying last time is that he was having trouble fielding Kyle's fastball because of the movement on it was pretty intense last time. It's stuff like figuring out Yu Darvish, who has 800 different pitches when he's healthy. I mean, he can approximately throw literally 800 different pitches. They move a lot. I mean, these aren't, and Chatwood is Chatwood. I mean, we all watched the struggle that it's been with him all year. Imagine being his catcher. I mean, you know, there's a lot going on there, I think, in terms of the difficulty of his workload right now that maybe is a little bit underappreciated.
Yeah, and to that point, I wasn't a huge fan of the idea of going into this season with two young catchers as your main guys. You know, Contreras obviously has been around for a couple of years and has developed in a very good way very quickly, and he's going to be your starting guy, but I like the idea of having a quality veteran guy behind him because, you know, Contreras even talked about how much he was learning from guys like Miguel Montero and David Ross in the past. And I feel like he probably needed somebody propping him up just a little bit, somebody to fall back on, to have that wise ear that he could bend a little on these kinds of issues, or a guy who could go out there and maybe give Wilson a break and catch Yu Darvish, you know, early in the season.
I think that would have helped.
Yeah, and not necessarily Chris Jimenez because he's been, you know,
that clearly wasn't the option. As much as we all, I think, wanted him to be able to be that, that obviously is not a role he's capable of filling at the major league level at this point in his career. But I agree. I think that I honestly think he was put in a little bit of an unfair position in terms of not having a veteran backup and then being expected to learn, again, Chatwood and catching Darvish, neither of which are easy things to do, while at the same time being in the position of needing to almost be the mentor himself to Vic, which, again, I think Victor should have playing time. I think he has a lot of promise. I do think he's important. But I think that giving him a start every 3 days when Contreras clearly doesn't need that much rest and when he's clearly the weaker bat, even if Wilson isn't hitting for power the way he was at the end of last year, seems odd. I don't really feel like it should be on Wilson's mind to be mentoring someone or teaching someone how to do anything at a major league level. I mean, I feel like it would have been so much less pressure for him and a lot less pressure generally on the way that his work is developed with the rotation if he had had, let's say, a Rene Rivera instead of Victor Caratini or Chris Jimenez.
Yeah. Let's move it forward a little bit. We have a few more questions. This is the last one for segment two, and we've already kind of answered this a little bit. UBlender44 on Twitter asks, I've been pondering whether something is dysfunctional and what it might be in the Cubs acquiring, managing, and developing pitching talent. A few things I've been kicking around. Several pitchers who bombed for the Cubs the last 2 or 3 years are finding success elsewhere. He cites Brett Anderson, Trevor Cahill, Hector Rondon, and even Arrieta. Several high-profile pitching acquisitions have not met expectations, or even moderate ones like Chatwood. And the Cubs' pitching prospects that seem to flash potential run into issues, cough, Jose Albertos, and or they just never make the jump and help the Cubs, especially starters. I don't want to spend too much time on this because we already touched on pitching and some of the things that go into that, but I feel like this is maybe just a little overblown because these kinds of things happen everywhere. The examples used, Brett Anderson, I don't feel like has been all that good this year.
I was going to say, I don't really see Anderson as someone who's had massive success. Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, you could also say, you know, look at Jesse Chavez or Cole Hamels, who were performing not well in Texas so far this year and have come here and have been much improved. You know, I think it works both ways.
Yeah, and you can talk about other guys that they've had that they've brought in who've had, you know, better success. A guy like Pedro Strop, who wasn't all that great, and he's been one of the best relievers in Cubs history since they brought him in. Yeah, Brandon Morrow was pitching extremely well until he got hurt, which is the thing that he does every year. So, you know, with Rondon, the Astros, they run, I mean, they run a system there that there are a few things that we don't have to get into about how they're not well run, but developmentally they're very well run. So it's not exactly shocking that Hector Rondon, who has a 98 mile an hour fastball and a huge breaking slider, it's not all that shocking that he would still find success, because a lot of relievers just kind of have that up and down year after year. You never know.
Rondon was, you know, for as much as, you know, people are saying, you know, he didn't have success here, he always did have talent, and he does have some great pitches. So I feel like it's not, like you said, it's not surprising that he would be good somewhere else. Plus, I mean, you know, whatever you think, Trevor Bauer, about the Astros pitching staff, they do clearly have a method that brings out the best in pitchers, and whatever they are doing is clearly working.
Right. So. Yeah, and as far as the minor leagues, Theo Epstein's talked about how the fact that their major issue in the minors is that they haven't been as great at developing starting pitching. They have some guys in the minors now that I think are on the way, and I think that you'll see this reflected in prospect lists maybe next year, where you'll see some guys start to pop up that are good on the Cubs side. But for Jose Alberto specifically, I've talked to a few people who think he was rushed a little bit considering his age, and the fact that they've kept rolling him out there for the most part this season was a little unfortunate as well. And this is a guy who's 19 years old, and maybe he was ranked a little too high on prospect lists a little too quickly based on some of the talent and not the actual results.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. I would say I don't know that it's I think it's a little bit overblown, like you said, to declare that the organization has sort of failed on a widespread level at developing starting pitching. I think also, like you said, a lot of the Cubs' premier or best talent right now is at the very, very low levels in the farm system. So I would say that's something that maybe evaluate in a year or two, where things are at and how some of the low A guys develop before we make a huge indictment on the farm system. And also, it is worth mentioning that the Cubs are probably one of the best teams at developing infielders, specifically middle infielders, and that those are incredibly valuable positions, especially at shortstop, where the Cubs do have a lot of good options coming up, not least of which being Nico Horner. So I think that when you have that ability to develop elite players at all, if they do or don't develop starting pitching, the reality is that they will have a lot of chips that will allow them to get starting pitching should that continue to be a problem.
Yeah. All right, let's go and wrap on that. We'll go to our final segment where we'll mention what happened in the NL Central yesterday, which was good news. I'll update the standings, and then we can take the final two questions. So if you were paying attention to the scores in the NL Central yesterday, you were probably a very happy Cubs fan. The Brewers took a 4-2 lead into the top of the ninth inning with Corey Knebel on the mound, but the San Diego Padres, those pesky Padres, they scratched
World Series contenders Padres.
The NL Central champion Padres.
They do own the NL Central. There's no denying at this point that the Padres absolutely own the NL Central.
Even though the Cubs did go, what was it, like 5-5?
It didn't feel like that, though.
Yeah,
it didn't feel like that at all.
No, not at all. They scratched out 6 runs, including a go-ahead grand slam in the 9th inning, and won 8-4 to take 2 out of 3 in that series. The Pirates beat the Giants. They've got Padres on the brain. They won 10-5, while the Cardinals, Reds, and Cubs were all off. So the updated standings are: the Cubs are 66-48. The Brewers are 66-52, 2 games back. Cardinals are 60-55, 6.5 back. Pirates 60-56, 7 back. And the Reds are 50-65, 16.5 games back. So next question, as we roll through, James asks, where has Addison Russell's power gone? Home runs are obviously down, but more worrisome, it just doesn't seem like he's barreling up the ball very often. I think I remember hand/wrist issues early in the year. Is that still lingering? This should be a double-digit home run guy, right?
So, I mean, he should be. I mean, you know, yeah, by all logic. I mean, watching him now, I think it's baffling that he hit 20 home runs in 2016. So, I mean, like, it's hard to look at him now and see how that was the same guy, to be honest. It feels like he's getting a lot weaker contact, and where he used to find holes, he's just not anymore. I think that you guys discussed Addison Russell very accurately and well in terms of his abilities and what he's going through this year. He's clearly had some issues with the wrist stuff this year again, too. I mean, he missed a couple games here and there when it was sore, not to the point of being on the DL, but, you know, there have been points where he's been rested and benched for a couple days at a time over it. So, I mean, that's clearly part of it, though obviously it's impossible for me as a layperson to say how much.
Yeah. Yeah, the weird thing about Russell is, so here are some numbers that I would throw out. Forget for a moment the kind of numbers that he's put up this year. And just hear this. His walk percentage of 9.3 is the best of his career. The strikeout percentage, 19.9, is the lowest of his career. He has a .322 BABIP, which is on the higher end of normal. Now, if you scroll down on Fangraphs and look at the batted ball, his line drive percentage career is 21.6. This year, it's 25.0. So line drives are up. Ground balls are pretty much within his normal range. His fly balls are down a little bit. But again, it's not for more ground balls. It's because he's hitting more line drives. His pull percentage is down. He's hitting a lot more to center field. And if you look at the soft percentage, medium percentage, hard hit percentage, it's all very much within, like right in line with his career numbers. And in fact, he's hitting less soft contact, easy for me to say, less soft contact than the 2016 season when he hit 20 some home runs. So put all that together, it seems like he's been, like, the numbers say he's hitting the ball better than he ever has.
But it's, we all just obviously are watching
the right games. Yeah. And I feel like I think those numbers are a result of several stretches where he is hitting the ball better and on a line, and it's just happening to go to, like, fielders. The obvious example is the other day against the Padres, that last game of that series, he went 0-for-4, mm-hmm, and he hit 3 balls extremely hard, 2 of which Freddie Galvis made a great play on, and the other one was like a diving play in right field by Hunter Renfro. So,
and that ball could have easily dropped. I remember the Renfro one specifically. That is a hit a lot of the time.
Yeah, and the 2 to Galvis, those were both base hits up the middle of the field, mm-hmm, like 9 out of 10 times. So I feel like that's been a part of it, is when he is going well, he's getting robbed. And when he's struggling, nothing's dropping in. So I don't want to say it's all bad luck, because he's still, you know, at his best, an average major league hitter, which is disappointing considering the potential of what you were told that he was coming up. But, that's really what it is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, when you hear the numbers you listed, it's obviously baffling to look at the results that he's actually had. And I think Addison is a guy who's always been very streaky. I always say this, but I feel like he's the king of the 2-week sample size. Yeah. I think that he goes on these runs sometimes where everyone sort of thinks, oh, he's fixed, or oh, he's putting it all together. And I have yet to really see, especially in the past 2 years, him put it all together for any extended period of time. And right. I think that, you know, I think that obviously, you know, you don't necessarily expect a huge level of offensive production maybe from a glove first shortstop. I mean, I understand that, but at the same time, it does kind of have to be better than it is right now.
Right. And we'll see. Well, maybe he picks it up a little bit the rest of the season and hits a few more home runs. I don't know what to say about him other than the numbers say he should be better than this. So I have to keep thinking if he's still in the lineup going out there in a low pressure situation of batting low in the lineup, eventually with the better contact and, you know, hitting it more on a line, even if the home runs don't go up, you would think more doubles.
Though I guess my question becomes, because obviously, okay, I don't want to do with Bodie what we did with Almora, where he's very good. And then we all think that he should be playing in every matchup or that he's not going to have down streaks too. But I do want to say, I feel like if he's consistently performing at this level, I don't know what place Addison has in the lineup. Honestly, I really don't. I don't see how you justify Addison and Baez at second over Baez and Zobrist or Bodie at second.
That's really the point I made on that podcast recently with Sean was, I think the answer to all of this is you ride it out a little bit with Russell and play the matchups with Bodie the rest of the year. And then in the offseason, maybe you package Russell with a couple prospects or another player on the major league roster for something else, somewhere else, maybe a bounce back potential guy, kind of swapping, you know, your disappointing player with somebody else's disappointing player that has potential.
Well, I do think Addison, and I want to say that I do think Addison honestly is a strong candidate for the change of scenery bump.
Yeah.
I think that honestly is something that might help him. And I'm not just saying that because I don't personally like him as a player. I just think that he's someone who isn't putting it all together here. Doesn't necessarily seem like he clicks the way that most of the other guys do with the team. And that's based on nothing really other than just my personal observations. So I don't want to, there's no gossip being given about him having drama with anyone. It just feels like he might be a better fit elsewhere.
Yeah. I've had the same sort of observations. I haven't been in the clubhouse every day, so I can say this without, you know, I can say this with the caveat of, I don't see him all the time, but when I see the guys interacting in the clubhouse, he's generally kind of by himself. So I think you're right in the idea that he maybe might click a little bit better somewhere else.
And, you know, I think that the idea of seeing him go in the off season is probably right. I certainly think that he does have value to some team. I just think he probably has more value to someone else than to the Cubs.
Yeah, I think the right kind of deal is probably the one I said, where you swap Addison Russell for somebody else's disappointing player that has potential. And then you go with Baez at short and then, you know, the kind of the rotation of Zobrist and Bodie at second base.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be my happy scenario. And obviously we don't, you know, Bodie could end up having a Max Muncy-esque stretch, since I know a lot of people have sort of been comparing him to Max Muncy in terms of our, you know, guy who comes up out of nowhere that no one's heard of and then all of a sudden is just absolutely crushing the ball. I think obviously look at Max Muncy now and you can see in your head that there could very easily be an end to the honeymoon with Bodie. But right. For right now, I you know, and the way that people like Rossi or Zobrist talk about him, it seems to me that everyone over there believes that this is a sustainable success for him and that he really is this guy. So I hope that that's true.
Yeah, that, you know, there's always the chance that Major League Baseball is going to adjust and he won't adjust back. Mm-hmm. But you're right. There are a lot of people who do believe in him. The last thing that I wanted to ask before we wrap here, Ashley on Twitter, who is a good friend of mine and I think a good friend of yours.
Yes.
She says, what's your opinions on putting ketchup on hot dogs?
Ketchup is good. I like ketchup. Ketchup is incredibly positive. I don't understand Chicago's general aversion to it. I think that the ketchup industry is being maligned here and that this is some kind of scheme by Big Mustard or Big Mayo to insult a very high quality condiment.
You know, I used to be a very big ketchup guy. I've been known to put ketchup on my hot dogs before. I don't find it offensive when people do that because I think it does taste fine. Now I generally put mustard on it more frequently. The thing that has been weird for me is as I've gotten older, I have started to realize that ketchup is kind of the inferior condiment of the major condiments. And
what?
And for, whoa. And for French fries.
Problematic statement right here.
And for French fries, I actually prefer like kind of different sauces. Like I
went to mustard on French fries is really good.
Yeah. I had some like ranch on French fries. Some like
ranch is good.
Yeah. Some like really different kind of ranch that I had on French fries. I went to a place in St. Louis when I was there for the Cubs series that serves, like if you order a burger and fries, they have a list of like 8 different homemade sauces that you can have with your fries. And one of them was like a sriracha mayo and like their own kind of sauce. And yeah, just doing that and made me realize this complements the French fries so much better than ketchup does.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, fries are potato based and ranch dressing with potato based foods is generally a good combination. So it makes sense. But yeah, I'm very pro ketchup. I also want to say that there are a lot of unexpected uses for ketchup that people don't appreciate. Ketchup is, and you're going to yell at me on Twitter. I don't care. It's good on ketchup. It's good on spaghetti rather. It's good on eggs. Ooh. It's good on a lot of stuff. And I just feel that it's very underappreciated. And also for you to say, ew, on spaghetti, what do you think tomato sauce is? It's the same thing. It's not the same in terms of texture or consistency, but the base is the same.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, when I think of like spaghetti noodles and spaghetti sauce, the thing that makes me say ew is that if I eat my spaghetti, I want it to be hot, and ketchup to me is always cold. So
room temperature is fine. Kind of middling, whatever. I'm alone in this, I'm sure. I get yelled at for the ketchup on spaghetti thing all the time. I don't think I know a single person who supports me on that, but it is good. And here's the thing. It's good. I discover these things, for the record. This is discovered because I was super broke in college, like incredibly broke, like, you know, like very, very creative, resourceful broke. And you come up with things to try to combine to eat that are incredibly inexpensive. And let me tell you, it is incredibly inexpensive to eat. Spaghetti and ketchup. You will spend nothing.
Oh, I have a friend who used to put ketchup in his macaroni and cheese, which
sounds awesome. I want to try that.
Disgusting. Yeah. but no, like as far as putting ketchup on a hot dog, it doesn't offend me. I've done it. I think it's fine.
Here's the deal with the Chicago anti-ketchup thing. As a non-native to the Midwest, I found it very bizarre, the intense scrutiny with which ketchup is seen.
I went to Byron's one time when I was still living in Chicago, and I ordered hot dogs with ketchup and mustard and pickles and celery salt. And the guy called me California boy.
What?
Yeah, I was just like, wait, what?
That's bizarre. I mean, the ketchup thing, I'm very pro. What I will say is that probably on this podcast, what you don't want to start is the pizza debate, because man, oh man, do a whole lot of you guys yell at me on Twitter whenever I point out the correct fact that your pizza is garbage casserole. Man, oh man.
Well, we're gonna wrap it right there.
we're ending it on me saying it's garbage casserole with no rebuttal. You're welcome.
we're going to end it right there because we don't have enough time to tell you all the ways that you are wrong. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening. It's been episode 122 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. Thank you, Kelly, for sitting in for Sean and helping me answer all the important questions about the Cubs and ketchup.
Yay. It was nice to be with you guys again. I hope you appreciated my answers, though I know you probably didn't appreciate the last one. I will get yelled at for that last thing more than for any of my sports opinions.
And very rightfully so.